Would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Brandon Summers from the Helio Sequence.
And I'm Benjamin Weichel from the Helio Sequence.
What defines a band versus a project versus a burrito?
Well, I mean, I think for us, it's just the fact that when we record things and we conceive songs, we will fill them out, you know, with the elements that a band would be playing, you know, the bass, the keys, lots of layers, overdubs, all those kind of things. So, you know, when you're...
That's right, you're not folk singers.
I mean, when you're listening to it, you're not really hearing, just like two guys and that's it. It's like a more of like a larger, complete vision.
I think it's because, you know, we sound like a band. I think that's why we always thought of ourselves as a band.
In fact, I think the majority of people that see us for the first time live and haven't done the research or seen anything...
are looking for a 12 piece.
Yes, and they're shocked. And that's the first thing they always say is, oh my god, I always thought there were at least five of you. And
or if they know there's two of us, then they're like, I didn't know if you guys were going to be able to do it or what it was even going to be like. And they're always a bit shocked, I think.
Oh, but you, god, no confidence on your fans. I mean, I'm so upset right now. Give me something. You have a choice of three ways to do this. One, some deep dark secret you've never told anybody. Number two, something people always miss when they talk to you. Or number three, completely lie about something. I'm looking for something that's really going to take us into this in a way that's a little more quirky than, oh, by the way.
I've got one that kind of is, you know, all of those things combined. It's more of a statement where you'd have to decide whether it's true or false. And the statement is... Benjamin's favorite food in the world is peanut M&Ms, and he will even eat them 5 minutes before he goes to sleep. So you have to decide whether that's, you know, a completely false statement, whether that's revisionist history, whether that's...
I don't think that's going to be revisionist history.
Dark secret, maybe? I don't know.
Okay, but now I get to ask a leading question. If it was indeed peanut M&Ms, is there a color involved?
There might be. It depends. You know, I can get a little spectrum-y sometimes, you know, so if I'm paying attention to colors, I might decide how... It's really kind of, how do I finish? What color do I want to save for last?
Before we get to what you did with the 20 songs, your friends who played the 20-song game that influenced you, the group in Portland that actually played the game, are there any... people that actually, as a result of that game, that the songs actually saw the light of day and we would know them?
Well, I mean, our friend Danny Syme, who plays in, you know, Menomina and has his own project, Lack Thereof, he put together an unbelievable record. And was it officially released? I don't know if
I think he gave it out for free. It's called Building Personal Strength. And that is the last time he did the 20-song game. He made this record, Building Personal Strength, and it's pretty unbelievable. I mean, you just have to listen to it because you couldn't believe that somebody could possibly do this. But yeah, he
might be on SoundCloud or Bandcamp or something like that.
But a bunch of his songs and even some of the Menomina songs have come from him doing the 20-song game, for sure.
So this is kind of interesting because it gets portrayed two ways. After the last record, you took a little time out, right? And you probably said, and there's a lot of out there, so I'll say it so you don't have to say it, that you were ready to kind of recharge and do something new. Now, the question is, did you choose to do the 20-song thing, as we'll call it? We'll call it the 20-song thing. Did you choose to do it because you felt creatively stifled, because it was an experiment? What was... really the impetus for it, other than it sounded cool and dangerous?
Well, I mean, it's more about the kind of momentum that we already had going, because going into 2013, we first spent like a few months all suited up and did a bunch of crazy studio revisions where we you know, built all these sound absorption diffusion panels and all this stuff. So we knew we were actively getting ready to record a record. And then we got a call from a Brazilian band, some guys from Sao Paulo, Corto Negro, and they, you know, basically said, I want you to produce and record our record. They flew up. We spent the second half of that year completely immersed in that. And coming out of it, we were already just kind of on a roll because we were spending almost every day in the studio. And Benjamin had heard and showed me Danny Syme's record, and we were both amazed by it. And he pitched the idea, like, well, what if, you know, we're going to record a record anyways, what if we just give ourselves some sort of parameters? And the 20-song game seemed like a really logical stepping off point.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't about that we were stuck, because we... we actually didn't even take any time off. I mean, we went straight from
touring, and then
we were rebuilding our studio. Then we were recording this Brazilian band, and then pretty much the moment they left, it was like I was talking to my friends. We were all organizing to do this 20-song game, and it was definitely more of let's try this because it'll be different for us. And let's see what we get out of it. We may not get anything. We might do one song in a day. I have no idea. But we figured let's just try this and see what happens.
Okay. So if I have the math right, 9 songs on the record out of 26. So let's get even more geeky. There were ratings, which we'll talk a little bit more about. Now, it'll be interesting. As I was listening on the way here, I decided to play my own game and see which song I would rate, and I will tell you later which one, because I decided which one's the next single for me, and I tend to be relatively good at picking singles, and then the band goes, yeah, why don't we release that one first? So, but that doesn't mean it got the highest rating, because it really depends who's in the game show and who your friends and relatives are. But what's more interesting to me, just to get really geeky about this, is then you pick the songs, right? And you have the ratings. Did you use those ratings to do crazy things like sequence the record?
No, it didn't have to do with sequencing, but the 10 songs that were the top 10 voted, right, in terms of points, are the ones on the record. And we didn't give ourselves any heavier weight, you know, in terms of voting than anybody else. So the way that we structured it was...
You didn't get more blue dots.
No, we got to choose our 10. The top 5 were, you know, got their 3 points. The next 5 in line got 2 points, and everything else got nothing. And we had like this Excel sheet and everything on a spreadsheet with everybody's name, and so we could see how everybody voted. And that was, you know, it was just all about the numbers, I guess.
Yeah, and I think both of us had favorite songs that didn't end up on the record.
Now, did you go back to the friends, send them the top 10, and then say, and did you get any reaction back from people saying, no, you don't understand. That song has to be on the record. You don't understand. I'm not your friend anymore.
But that's what always happens. If you show anyone an album that's not done, then you get a completely different response than this album is done.
And or, you know, you'll have this amazing, I mean, you could almost show somebody the exact same mixes, you know, a few weeks later and be like, it's done. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, it sounds a lot better. Or it's like, yeah, well, you really, really smooth, you know, smooth that out. And it's amazing psychologically what that can do. Or mastering, that's another thing.
Well, yeah, boy, look at that. That's right here. But I'm gonna kind of put that in because, okay, so the process was kind of organized loosey-goosey to a certain extent, right? Which just could be the name of your next album. Organized loosey-goosey is not a bad name for a record. But then the fact of the matter is that you do self-record, you do self-produce, so the self-editing thing has to probably be a norm to you anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And that the whole reason for doing the 20-song game and having it move so quickly and having the idea be to just create as much as you can in a certain amount of time was to limit that self-censorship. You know, like we actually tried to go back on a few things and edit them, whether it be lyrics or let's add a part here or, you know, a structure of a song. And anything that we did really just kind of didn't help the songs to
it
be.
Took away from the organicness of the process.
It maybe, did. It maybe, sounded like an addendum. Or
yeah,
something.
I mean, and not always. I mean, sometimes we made changes to things and it was better, you know, but it just, yeah, it depended.
In everything you do, you're all about layers, you know, and this process probably allowed you to do that better than anything you've done before because you're coming up with the ideas really fast, but then you still have to take a deep breath and go, okay. When you come up with an idea really fast, it's your baby and it really looks really good. And then you have to give it a moment to breathe, even if you're under a process, right?
Well, we've learned about that over the years. There's a certain amount of like preciousness with songwriting, anything you create that you kind of have to let go of. And that was part of giving all these songs out to 31 people. They were in no way even close to being finished or, you know, super well mixed. And we've always waited until we have something that we feel like is extremely presentable before we show anybody. And that was kind of the liberating part of this process.
And too, Brandon and I were, you know, we've been working together so long that, you know, we rely on each other for editing and you kind of have to give up the ego at that point. Because somebody's, you're like, hey, I need you to tell me, like, is this keyboard thing that I did today, is this cool or is this lame? And And you have to accept that if somebody's like, no, I'm not into it. And you're like, okay, cool, I'll try something else. Or
this record, you're changing, but you're not consciously choosing a direction.
No.
So tell me, that's a really interesting dichotomy there, right? Because you say, I'm changing, but I'm not necessarily going due north.
I think a lot of it has to do with the, like as you mentioned there, it's the subconscious that was involved. And by, you know, just kind of moving ahead and writing as we went, a lot of the things that we have been influenced by in the past that have been a part of Heliosequence, say from our first two records, Complex and Young Effectuals, kind of came back. And it was nice because it wasn't some premeditated thing like, oh, you know, let's do something like our first two records, because this one is very different. But it's, this record is as much of like a summation, it's like of everything that we've done, as it is a step forward. And it still feels like, because it was an open-ended process, it's still in the process of, you know, becoming. And that helps us to like lead into the next one. Like, oh, you know, let's do something like our first two records, because this one is very different. But it's, this record is as much of like a summation, it's like of everything that we've done, as it is a step forward. And it still feels like, because it was an open-ended process, it's still in the process of, you know, becoming. And that helps us to like lead into the next record.
Everything associated with this visually so far is very colorful.
Visually, we're very involved with what we do. You know, we do create the music first, and then the visual is obviously like a reflection on whatever we were feeling when we were creating it. So the record's recorded in spring. We are showing up on these beautiful May mornings. You know, it was just actually an amazing month in Portland. And whereas our last record was recorded like in the pitch black of night, which again is reflective.
I was in Portland, by the way, ironically, while you were recording that album. And all everybody was saying to me and my partner in crime was, you have caught some of the best weather ever.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, we were talking to my wife, does all the graphic design. It was just kind of communicating these things with her, like just throwing those ideas out and saying, well, what would you do? We didn't go to her and say like, well, we wanted to have, you know, no words or no title and you know, have a son. You know, it was all just very organic. We threw these feelings out to her completely nebulously, and she's able to kind of translate that, show us a bunch of different ideas, treatments, and then we kind of narrowed it down from there. And the video was an extension of that, because we already had this identity. We're like, well, you did such a good job, you know, nailing this feeling visually with this cover. Alyssa from Sub Pop mentioned like, well, why don't you guys do some like Instagram teasers? And so we started looking for animators, and we're seeing a bunch of stuff, and it wasn't really working. You know, it seemed to have too much of a different identity and wasn't really hitting the feeling we were looking for. And at the very last moment, she sent us a link to Emmanuel Okebu, who's he's actually Italian, but he's London-based animator and multimedia guy. And immediately Benjamin was like, this is the guy.
Gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, and amazing. And he was extremely open to the idea of, hey, you know, as a stepping off point, here is the visual identity of the record. And he had the music, so he could feel it by listening to it as well. Let's start with something that is, you know, an animated version of the cover, which he did like a 15-second clip for Stoic Resemblance we used for Instagram. And then after that, because we trusted and loved what he does so much, we were kind of like, well, you take this vision and just extend it from here. Like, wherever you want to go with it, you know, go for it, and we'll just kind of bounce things off of each other.
The other quote that I really love is that, Benjamin, you said that Brandon's lyrics are starting to reflect your life. Uh-huh. That was really kind of freaky.
Oh yeah, I mean it's.
But it is about being together so long that it just everything just kind of starts to merge, right?
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that we've done lyrically, or that Brandon's done lyrically, is have a lot of, you know, universal themes that, you know, a lot of people relate to. There's people that come up to us every night, you know, saying, "Oh, keep your eyes ahead, got me through this really tough time," and. I mean, it's so flattering, you know, that you could make something that beginning to end helps somebody feel better about a tough time that they're going through. Yeah. And it is interesting. There's been points where, you know, our own music, you know, I can listen to it and relate to it in a way, even though I know what Brandon might be singing about, it can still relate to what's happening in my life.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs is the bread on the outside, and then anything you want to play on the inside in between.